morning. It is Thursday, January the 17th, and you've tuned into the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. I am Jack, and across from me is Jim, your usual Thursday morning show co-hosts.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing on this snowy morning?
I'm doing well, and I enjoy the snow, and so I say snow better than cold, and snow better than rain, so right now I'm doing pretty well.
And it is January, after all, and one should expect the white stuff.
Yes. I have before me the forecast for our local area here. The conditions here in Sandpoint, we do have snow actually coming down. Did you see it when you were coming in this morning?
When I came in this morning at about 10 of 6, just a little...
Just beginning.
It's, and then when I went out to get tea and came across, I'm like, gosh, we've had a blizzard.
Yeah, it started. It's not quite a blizzard yet, but it has begun, and it is currently 30 degrees Fahrenheit. The high today is near 33. The total accumulation today is going to be 1 to 3 inches, according to the National Weather Service. We have a 100% chance of snow, and it has begun. Snow and then a mix of rain and snow tonight, with 90% chance this evening. Tomorrow, rain and snow to begin, and then a chance of rain or snow, which is a decreasing chance, I guess. We're going to start out with snow in the morning, and then maybe we'll just keep having snow, but maybe we won't. Who knows?
Well, there's great comfort in what you said this morning in terms of the forecast when you said chance of precipitation 100%, because sometimes when you say, like, chance of precipitation 70%, you have to be in the right 70%. Mm-hmm. If you're in the other 30%, then you didn't get it. But this way, you just step outside to get your newspaper, you're going to get snow, whether you like it or not.
Yes.
I do have the incredible, as we always say, technology. You can stream KRFY wherever you are. And my sister and brother-in-law are in Arlington, Virginia, are listening right now. And they sent me the forecast for the D.C. area weather. 35 now, high of 36 today, cloudy, gray day. That's the way it is.
You may know more about this than I do or not, but there aren't they about to get a aren't they in the middle of a winter storm?
You know what they call it? My sister, I called her this morning when she's they call it an event. You know, like the cosmos is hosting an event.
Yes.
And we're just going to stop air travel, and we're going to stop highways and everything. I just find that the use of the English language amazing.
Yes.
You know, an event. Ooh, an event. I want to go to an event and have a good time. you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, for some folks out in the East, a quarter inch of snow is paralyzing.
It's a major weather event.
Absolutely.
Is what's going on. Scheduled for this weekend, I guess. There is a hazardous weather outlook provided by the National Weather Service.
For us?
For us.
Go away.
Well, at least portions of our area. Portions of North Idaho, Eastern Washington, and East Central Washington and Northeast Washington. Day one is today and tonight, and that's the only day that they provide information for. A mix of freezing rain, sleet, and snow will produce locally treacherous driving conditions this morning around Spokane, Coeur d'Alene, Davenport, Wilbur, and Grand Coulee.
Okay.
Lowland snow accumulations of 1 to 3 inches will be common today in Northeast Washington and North Idaho, mainly north of the Spokane, Coeur d'Alene metro area to the Canadian border. Day 2 through 7, no hazardous weather is expected at this time.
Okay, yeah. Excellent, excellent. So how is your world spinning?
It continues to spin. I was batching it this weekend, you knew that, right?
Yeah.
Annie was out of town.
Frozen dinners?
Pizza.
Okay.
Cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburger.
It wasn't very healthy, I guess. I ate some cheeseburgers, ate some pizza, and some chili.
There you go.
Not a lot of vegetables. It's nice to have her back. And I didn't really do much of anything. I was going to go see a movie, but there's nothing I really wanted to see.
Did you see the Bohemian Rhapsody?
I didn't.
Shame on you.
I know. It was that matinee thing. I couldn't, by the time it started, I had already... You know, I looked at the watch.
No excuses.
Yeah.
I had a tooth extracted on Tuesday.
Yes, you did. And thank goodness.
That you're not the only one saying that. But, you know, what I oftentimes do is I get up in the early in the morning and I read. And that's usually when I bond with my latest issue of The New Yorker. And I came across a fact yesterday that, you know, just blew me away. And I've just been telling everybody about this fact I read in The New Yorker. And it was a review of a book on blood. And you go, meh. And it said that in an average day, your blood travels over 12,000 miles in your body. Okay, now wrap your mind around that. Wrap your mind around it. That right now, the blood coursing through your veins is going to travel 12,000 miles if you live to the end of the day.
Yeah.
12,000 miles. I mean, and just think of that, of what your heart is doing. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, let's turn Beth's microphone on. I mean, we have Beth Weber with us. She is going to talk about the festival at Sandpoint Summer Music Camp. What do you think about that fact, Beth?
Oh, I think that's amazing.
Coughed back 3 miles.
You know, when you're talking about events, my husband had a heart attack a while back, and they didn't call it that. They called it a cardiac event. So here we have a cardiac event, and we've got one going on all day, every day. That's
a party on the heart.
Wow,
12,000 miles. Yeah.
Go home and tell your husband. Is he listening to us now?
Maybe.
12,000. I mean, that just blows me away.
That's, I mean, it's more than across the country.
I was going to say,
all the way around the
LA
world.
LA to New York, and New York to LA. Your blood has traveled, and you haven't moved one. And you don't feel it, do you?
I rarely do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, that's just one little fact that just, you know, this is an incredible world we're living in, that there's all sorts of neat little things like that. You know, you don't go anywhere with that except on Double Jeopardy if it's the answer is 12,000 miles and you go, the amount of blood, you know, something like that. But
so we have jet set blood cells.
Yeah. I just find that incredible. I mean, do they get road rash? Anyway, we're with Beth Weber, and she has joined us. She has slogged through the snow, and she's going to talk about, she's the director, administrator of the Festival at Sandpoint Summer Music Camp, and this is going to be the second annual event scheduled for June 24th through the 27th of this summer. And tell us about the camp itself, the first year, and right now registration is open.
Registration is open, and we've already got 85 students signed up, actually.
Whoa.
So that's a testament to what a success it was last year. We had 116 students signed up last year. We're putting a cap on it at 120. It's a completely free camp except for the $25 registration fee. And there are 4 days complete from 9 to 3:30 days of musical instruction. For that, we've got people teaching who have PhDs in their chosen instruments, such as Jason Moody on violin and Mike Keepy on the saxophone. PhD on saxophone, can you imagine? And then we have people who have master's degrees, such as Mika Hood, who's got a master's in cello performance, and Rachel Gordon, who has master's in flute performance. She'll be teaching. We have people from the Spokane Symphony, Anita Perkins, who plays the viola in the symphony. And this year, a new instructor for us is Erica Tregenza Moody, who plays the harp for the Spokane Symphony. So we will actually have harp instruction at the festival at Sandpoint's Music Camp. We also have, this year will be a new thing, we'll have Karen Dignan teaching contradance. Dance is an important part of music. It helps your body move to the rhythm. And if you have rhythm, you've got music.
The harp catches my ear.
Right.
There. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, do we have students or do we have harp students here in town?
I don't. don't believe we have any in town, are some in Coeur d'Alene, quite a few in Coeur d'Alene and Spokane. So this is open to the whole area between Moscow, Ritzville, Creston, and... Well, anybody that finds out about us and wants to come.
Sure.
You know, we've got some kids that have actually come from California and are coming back. Mm-hmm. And we have someone who's coming from Bainbridge Island who is coming back.
I know someone from Seattle last year who was here.
Yes.
And I don't know, is Maddie coming back?
I haven't heard from Maddie yet, but I'm hoping she'll be back.
Now, now what's the set limit of the number of students you can have?
120 students. This year, and so we're at 86.
Already. Where you were last year, how many? I mean, has the word gotten out about the summer camp?
Yes, the word has gotten out. I mean, we just put the press release out January 5th.
Incredible.
That's a lot of students.
So, how many returnees?
Do you have a sense of people who were last year? A lot of the kids are returning. And not only are they returning, but they're bringing siblings or friends.
Oh, what fun. Yeah.
So
it really is a camp.
Oh, yeah. Only we don't spend the night. You know, we don't provide lodging. But we do provide free lunches for all the students and organic snacks during the daytime. So...
Well, one of the things we do want to say is we have a tendency to forget that the festival at Sandpoint, they just bring us entertainment. But they also give back to the community, and this is one way in which the festival, Dino and her gang over there, do just a bang-up job.
Right. If you go to their website, there's a little button at the top that says education, and you can click on education and find out all the wonderful things they're doing, such as providing instruments for the band students in the schools, or doing all the repairs for the band students in this, you know, for the instruments in the schools. Then they have a fifth grade outreach every May, where they have a small ensemble that goes around to the fifth graders and teaches them about the various instruments, from string instruments through the wind instruments. And that's conducted usually by Gary Sheldon from the Miami Ballet Orchestra. And he comes over here and drags his little orchestra around to all the schools in the county. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty fun thing to be a part of. And the kids are very excited because that's where they get to learn, what's a bassoon? So they do that. And then this orchestra, but there's also a local Sandpoint Youth Orchestra that's free for any string students who want to be in that. It's directed by Karen Dignan, and the festival sponsors that.
Is a harp considered a stringed instrument?
It is.
But there's no harps in Sandpoint, as far as we know. They're trying to start a harp farm here. But,
yeah. When I first led the Spokane's Youth Orchestra years ago, there was a harp student here, and he was studying with Eric Etrigenza.
Ah.
And, he would drive all the way to Spokane. His parents would drive him there. But he had a huge harp, $40,000 harp, big thing. You know, it's like carrying a piano around with you. Eric is going to be teaching at the music camp two different kinds of harp. Pedal harp, which is the big harp, and lever harp, which is a little bit smaller, and you have to retune it for each key. So, but we're pretty excited. We've got kids signed up.
So she's going to have two different kinds of harp?
Mm-hmm.
That's what
she's offering.
What does a pedal do on a harp? Is it do the same thing like a... Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I'm just intrigued by that. I mean,
I know very little about harps.
The thing I know about a harp is at one time I was running through there was a period of time through the Minneapolis airport, and you know they have a person playing a piano. They had a person playing a harp, and of course you're dashing to get your next connection, and you hear this harp music. All of a sudden you want to slow down.
Yeah, you feel like you're in heaven.
I wonder about how it ever came associated. A harp, you know, you have angels playing harps. I'm sure, you know, they're not playing like grand pianos or anything like that. Maybe it's so peaceful and whatever. How exciting. So
we're going to learn a lot about harp this year.
So will students have a one-on-one, a chance to play the harp?
Definitely. That's what they're going to be doing. They'll be playing harp with her every day. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can incorporate them in the orchestra as well. It just depends on
what flows together yeah. and what works.
So all the students have to send in a one-minute video of themselves playing their very best piece. So we can tell what we have here as far as abilities, and then we can select the music and the classes according to who the students are.
Mm-hmm. So, what sort of feedback did you get from last year? I'm sure that you got feedback from parents and students and people who were guest performers and instructors. What sort of information did you get back?
Nothing but positive feedback. Everybody was just thrilled with it. And so I was thrilled since it was our first attempt. We had a big picnic on the last day down at City Beach, and the kids all got their T-shirts, and we had photographs taken of them. And that was a really fun thing. On Monday, the first night of the festival, or of the festival music camp, we have a concert at the Panetta Theater performed by all of the instructors.
Oh, is that so cool?
Yes, it's very cool. They are so professional and, so good at what they do. It's really a treat to get to, see them do it instead of just their teaching, which is a wonderful thing, too. But, like John and his brother Bruce Brownell are our choir teachers. Every student in the camp sings in the choir. And so it's a, 120 student
voices.
Choir, right? Yeah, but they were dancing across the stage and singing together, and it was just
a joy.
Yeah, really lots of fun.
So this
is inspiration.
June 24th to the 27th,
right?
And so, what are you doing during that week?
Just racing around, keeping things together. You never know what you're going to be doing when you're an administrator. Somebody might get sick, and you might have to somehow contact their parents, or, trying to get the snacks out and ready at the right time, and
you're like the social director on
yes.
a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, where's the camp held?
This is held at the Sandpoint High School.
Ah, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yep.
And day starts at what time and ends at one time?
It starts at about 9 o'clock and ends at 3:30.
Okay.
But then, like Monday, we end at 3:30. You get a little break, but then you have the concert to go to see all your teachers playing this wonderful music, flute solos. We're going to have a saxophone cello duet this year that's going to be
Wait, a saxophone?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
No. Right. The answer is no, I've not heard such a thing.
This man has a PhD in saxophone performance, remember?
Sure.
And he plays classical saxophone as well as jazz and other forms that we're more accustomed to. When he played last year, everybody said, "I've never heard anything like it." So, yeah, it's a wonderful experience.
Shows you how ignorant, for much as much as I like music, a classical saxophonist.
Mm-hmm. I'm not too familiar.
One of his goals is to promote saxophone ensembles, because there's a lot of beautiful saxophone music out there that nobody really knows about, or even that the average American doesn't know about.
Well, when I think of saxophone, I think of jazz.
Of course. Yeah, we all do, I think.
Yeah, and then to hear you say classical, I go, whoa, that's a whole new geography I need to learn.
So here we're going to have a saxophone cello combination. We also have Leon Atkinson teaching.
Oh, on the guitar.
Yep. So he'll be doing a performance on Monday as well. And he's got a couple of students signed up already.
He'll be doing classical guitar,
he'll be
I
doing
imagine.
Classical guitar. Mm-hmm. Larry Mooney will be doing beginning guitar. He does the Child Bloom guitar program, which is a special pedagogy for beginning guitarists. So we'll have him as well.
Well, I was just thinking classical guitar with classical saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. I mean, the combinations are
endless.
Right? Endless.
Yeah.
What fun. Now, if one still wants to get one of the slots for registration, how does one go about it?
Go to the Festival at Sandpoint website. Just Google Festival at Sandpoint, and it'll come up. And then when that site comes up, punch the education button at the top of the page. And then there'll be a picture of Jason Moody, I believe. And under that, you can punch a button that says go to the orchestras and music camp, summer music camp. You just keep following the buttons.
Following the different prompts and can get you through.
There are some really great pictures of the kids from last year.
Last year. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we've got a group photograph of all of them, and then there are pictures of them working in their classes. And then at there's an online application there. You can pay online and you can apply online. Or there are some other options that are stated if you're more comfortable going into the office and mm-hmm. paying in person and applying in person, that's available too. There's a downloadable application as well. And all of the band teachers in the area have been given, you know, Aaron Gordon and Ryan Dignan at the middle school and high school band teachers have been given application forms. So if any of the students there would like to have one, they can just get it from their teacher.
And can one call the festival office?
One can call the festival office. And if they would like any further information or details about it, they can call me, Beth Weber, at 208-771-5471. And I would be happy to tell them anything they need to know about the camp.
It's just a joy to have you here a second time around, Beth, because, you know, you're enthusiastic. And just by the way that you talk about the camp, that it's a wonderful experience for everyone, for the parents, for the students, for the instructors. It's just a great time. You get people together doing music.
Right.
What could go wrong?
It is. I know. It's like, I'm so lucky to be able to do this. It's just a fun
thing. And I'm sure the festival is so lucky to have you, with your skill set. Is the number of students that you are cutting it off at, is that higher than last year, or?
No. We were prepared to do about that many, but I don't think we could handle any more than
that. Any more than that.
Yeah, we pretty much filled everything available at the school, and we filled up the days, and all the teachers were fully busy, so as busy as they wanted to be, right? We also are offering, besides the classes, we're offering master classes, which is where an individual goes in, maybe four or five students will go into a classroom with a master teacher, and each one of them will play a little bit of what they know, and then the master teacher will give them some tips on their personal progress, what they need to do move to the next level. So there's the one-on-one as well, and plus all the other students that are sitting there get to see how that student can improve, and they can apply that
and
to themselves, too.
They learn
too.
By watching.
Right. So that's a cool thing. And then at the end of the 4 days, Thursday night, we have a concert at the Panada Theater with all of the students performing.
So you have two Panada Theater events.
In 1 week.
January 24th and then January 7th.
27th.
January 27th. Mm-hmm. And I keep on saying January. It's June.
June, right. I was going with you there.
I know. That snow has just discombobulated me. I mean, I'm not with it quite yet. But June 24th, a Monday, through June 27th,
right.
A Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a wonderful week.
And then we have on the website, if you're coming from out of town, we have a list of different hotels, motels, and summer, what are they called?
B&Bs.
B&Bs, yeah, that are available if you're looking for a place to stay. So
one more time again, if somebody out there is listening who either is interested or knows a child who might be interested or a relative or whatever, the best way is to go to the Festival at Sandpoint website.
Right.
And hit the education tab and then just follow the prompts.
Follow the prompts.
Beth, it is good to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it's always good to have anyone associated with the festival at Sandpoint, because we love what they do, who they bring to the community, and also what they give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we say to someone, you know, if this was a stage play, we'd say break a leg. What do we say? Break a string on your violin something like that?
No, I just tell them, have fun.
Oh, hey.
Play your hearts out.
What a concept. Yeah. Have fun. Thank you so much, and I hope that the second annual, and we'll have you back for the third annual, I'm quite sure.
I hope so.
Beth, thank you so much for taking time out of this snowy morning.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do, go home and shovel?
No, my husband gets to have that job. So.
Division of labor, the best.
That's right.
Okay, we're going to do a song, and then we're going to have our second set of guests coming in. It was on this date in 1970 that the Doors did, a two- or three-day concert series at the Felt Forum in New York City that resulted in their Absolutely Live album. And we're going to play a cut from that. This will take you back to Jim Morrison and the Doors. Here is Build Me a Woman. That was the Doors. Build Me a Woman from 1970. That was, let's see, how many years ago? 30, 40, 48 years ago, right?
Yeah. Gotta be.
Gotta be. 48 years ago. Are you a Doors fan?
Yeah. Sort of. The first album, yes.
You hesitated.
I mean, the first album is groundbreaking, and then...
Light My Fire.
And then there's... Soft. I like L.A. Woman and stuff, yeah.
Soft Parade, Morrison Hotel. I have to be in a Morrison mood and the Doors mood. You know, I just don't go home and throw them on.
It does require a certain mood, I would say. And I'm not always in that mood. I mean, some of it is really,
don't be so defensive,
really great, but I don't always love the Doors. Sometimes they're a little, you know, sometimes they're just not, they're just a touch overrated is all I'm saying.
They're not where you're at.
No, I think Jim Morrison's death made them a legendary band, perhaps more legendary than the actual music quality would merit. But I wasn't around at that time. I don't know.
Oh, jeez. Rub it in.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
We have people with us in the studio.
Yes, we do. Oh, yes, we do. Here we are with the two co-hosts of an upcoming event at Evans Brothers Coffee this coming Monday, January 21st. The Death Cafe is the name of the event. It's a conversation about death and accompanied by, I'm guessing, tea and coffee. Yes. We have with us Heidi Hamp and Brian Lawrenson. Heidi, you're hosting, I guess, the first portion of the event, and you can tell us a little bit about it. Was this your idea, or whose idea was it to host this rather unusual event? Or at least I've never heard of it here in town.
Okay, yeah. I am facilitating it, mm-hmm. and the Death Cafe is something that started in 2010, 2011, by a man named John Underwood, and he was inspired by the work of this man, Bernard, and he felt that it was an important piece with the death work, just to talk about it, to create a safe place for people just to get together and have the focus be to talk about death. Mm-hmm. So I didn't make it up, but I've been really passionate, you know, to talk about death, to talk about conscious death and dying. You know, my mother died when I was 11, and then I helped my dad facilitate his death, and I saw how the people were around him when he was on his deathbed and the uncomfortability. And I felt that some of the conversations could have happened, you know, way before he was really kind of at death's door at that point. And so I looked into how I would want it to be, and I found death midwifery work. So I studied with a woman there, and she turned me on to Death Cafe.
Yeah.
And then when I moved to Sandpoint, I looked to see if there was one, and there hadn't been, at least from the time that I moved here. It was almost 5 years ago. And then I met Brian, and I got really excited because he's really passionate about the same things. And so the impetus moved us forward to pick a date. And that's how this has happened. So,
what were some of the conversations you mentioned earlier that some of the conversations about death were not occurring when you went through the experience with your father? What were some of the conversations that were not taking place?
Good question. Well, no one in the family really understood what my dad really wanted beyond, you know, who was getting what and things like that, but really, what were his wishes, you know, how he wanted the space held for him, you know, at the time of his death. He was at a vet hospice, and So I start talking to him about that. But that's like when he's on his deathbed. So it made a lot of people uncomfortable that were in the family because it wasn't something normal. They were used to just someone dies and then someone comes and takes the body and then you do your grieving, you know, and then you bury them and it's gone. But there was a lot of questions up for a lot of different people, including my father. And so I could see the stress that was in him because there was no one holding space for him to really talk about this. And all he wanted to do was talk about it, and all the other, some of the family members were wanting to him to pretend like he was going to be there at Thanksgiving and Christmas, and he wasn't. And so I just noticed that there was a uncomfortability for them to talk about their own death, his death, death in general. And so I was the only person that did that for him. And he thanked me multiple times in that process and transformed his whole room and got the things that he loved from home and built altars for him and anointed his body with oils. And, you know, we just kind of made it more comfortable for him in his transition. And and I don't think that if he felt open to be able to express what he wanted in that moment around his death, it wouldn't have happened. And then it would have just been the kind of the mainstream way of doing things.
Right. This is in the process of his dying. Are there conversations one could have or should have, let's say, beforehand, before one is in that position?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, talking about those things beforehand, like my family knows what I want to happen with my body, and they know how I want I'm having a home funeral, and I'm also going to be buried on our land. Mm-hmm. So that's something that is in discussion. So talking to them about those things and encouraging my family to tell me about what their feelings are around that. Like right now, while I'm not in the process, we're all in the process of dying from the time we took our first breath, but I'm not actually dying right now in this moment. But my family, I ask them, how does that feel when I ask you to take care of my body, you know, to have me at home, to take care of the dry ice, you know? You know what I'm saying? Like the more details surrounding it.
I'm old enough to not remember, but my grandparents, where bodies were viewed at home before they were moved into funeral homes. That was part of the process. How does a discussion unfold at the cafe? Is it awkward initially, or how do you approach the topic with a group of people whom you don't know what experiences they're bringing to?
Yeah, it's really organic in its nature. So you just show up, and people will get their teas and their coffees, and we'll have some cupcakes, cookies. People show up, you know. Someone might come with something they need to talk about or they want to talk about. Like they have a fear of death and this is what they're thinking about, or they might have a question that they want to ask and it's for the group. So there's no one leading the conversation necessarily. It happens in an organic way. So whatever the people that are present want to talk about and what they want to share, it happens in that way. There's no agenda. So the one thing for Death Cafe that's important to know that the principles, which you can go online and look at deathcafe.com, it's very clearly laid out. It's free from any ideology. You do not lead participants to any particular view of life or death or any sort of afterlife products or services. It's not a place to promote anything, so it's safe and nurturing. So people can express their thoughts and feelings and just talk about death, whatever comes up for them organically in the moment. It's open to all religions and faiths and people of all walks of life. And it's important to keep the participants' thoughts and feelings confidential. And often it's held in someone's home, private home. But since this is our first time hosting here in Sandpoint, we wanted to do it somewhere that was a community, kind of the center of community, and Evans Brothers holds a lot of events there, and people feel, safe, and there's an exit door that they can leave very easily, right? And that's why we chose this time, and only 1 hour. Often there are 2 hours, and sometimes 2.5 hours, but for this time, we just wanted to get together and just approach and see who's interested. Talk about it.
And see where it goes and see if it continues. Okay. Yeah. And where does Brian come in now?
Well,
where does Brian come in now?
Well, I was I spent a lot of time in a funeral home growing up. Both my dad and grandfather were morticians and funeral home owners. And so I was very close to dead bodies and death. I would sometimes sit in the prep room or the embalming room with my dad and watch him perform his trade. But oddly enough, all that time that I spent at a funeral home, there was not talk about death, the dying process, or the grieving process. That seemed like it was separate from the dead. And so that was really interesting for me. When my grandmother died, I thought it was my job to remain emotionless and stoic and not express my grieving. And now looking back at that, I could have handled that differently. I just didn't know how. And so now I suddenly found myself operating a funeral home, and I decided to start introducing Death Cafe to the funeral home there. And so that's where I come in. The funeral home that I operate is located in Washington State, but I live here in Sandpoint. So when I met Heidi, we had decided that this was something that we'd like to introduce to the Sandpoint community and see how it takes hold.
So you did Death Cafe back in Washington?
Yes. And I have, yes, I did not facilitate the Death Cafe there, but we do host them there.
And what was the response like?
The response is typically not a large turnout. We typically got about eight people or so to show up, but that's great, and that's a start.
Absolutely.
And we'll see what happens here in Sandpoint. There's certainly been a lot of interest, so we'll see how that goes.
Well, it's certainly not a common when you walk around town and look at posters on the board. You see who's performing where and whatever. You see Death Cafe, and that sort of catches one's eye. Again, this is this Monday, January 21st, 4 to 5 p.m., at Evans Brothers in the Greenery District. And Heidi will do the discussion, and then afterwards, after the first hour...
Yeah, because Death Cafe is no agenda driven, so it would violate those principles if I was to bring up what I'm really passionate about. So we're gonna separate the two events, but afterwards, after Death Cafe, those that are interested will continue the discussion, and it will lead into the natural burial process, also known as green burials, and the movement that has sparked. And and perhaps creating a burial grounds here for the Sandpoint community where we can care for our dead in a natural way without using any harmful products. Something as simple as being buried in a shroud directly in the ground where the body can decompose naturally and provide a rich resource for life to come. Hmm.
Are there legal questions about that? I mean, is there anything prohibiting you from?
We're very fortunate up here in North Idaho that the legal red tape is very minimal, and across the country, really, it's considered the least impactful way of caring for the dead.
Yeah,
and actually, least impactful isn't even honest, because it's actually beneficial to care for the dead in this way.
Right. It's interesting. It's not something that's commonly done. I'm not aware. I don't know anyone or any family member or anybody who's done it that way.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And it's also there is the environmental aspect to it, but more importantly is allowing a family to grieve in a very real way where they're hands-on. A family would be able to wash and prepare the body themselves. And speaking of home funerals, I've heard some amazing and beautiful stories about families who had their loved one in the home for 3 days, and it was that magical 3-day period where they could actually witness firsthand the spirit of the body leaving the body, and just witnessing that moment gave those folks an incredible amount of closure. Whereas what we would call a traditional funeral, the body is removed from the place of death and is segregated from the family until they've been cared for in that manner, and so the family isn't actually involved in that process.
Mm-hmm. There was a movie. Oh gosh, I can't remember. I want to say 5-6 years ago that came to the Panada, a Japanese movie. Do you remember the name of it, Heidi? It was beautiful. He was a musician who no longer, the orchestra no longer needed him, so he went back to his small hometown and he became a preparer of bodies, and that he would come to the house of the deceased person and dress the person, wash the person, while the family approvingly looked on. It was very beautiful movie, and for the life of me, I can't remember the name of it. But it was a beautiful insight into a way another culture handles the death process. Mm-hmm. But it goes along with what you were talking about, Brian.
Yeah.
Now, you've been in the funeral business. You inherited it from your dad?
Correct.
How has the business changed from a business point of view since you were in contact with your dad through today?
It's been very slow to change. It's almost as if the market hasn't yet decided which direction it wants to go. So although the option for a simple burial or a home funeral is available to most people, either there's a lack of awareness around it, or it certainly might be inconvenient to do such a thing. And the conversation of death isn't the most popular conversation to have until the 11th hour, until it's right there at the door. So having something like a death cafe, which to repeat would be at Evans Brothers on Monday, January 21st at 4 p.m. till 5 p.m., this is a place that allows us to start having that conversation in a safe container. And raising awareness around this.
And see, not every death is not every death is the same, because sometimes a sudden accident, like with your dad, Heidi, where you could talk through the process and have it. Not every family has that opportunity, because sometimes death happens suddenly. So sometimes talking about it. And, you know, it's sort of like, when is the right time? It's like talking with your children about sex. When is the right time to talk about it?
Usually after they started having sex, right?
Or usually after a person starts dying. But you're absolutely correct. It's one of those taboo, at least right now where we're at in our culture. You're opening a book, Heidi.
Yeah, I just wanted to share something that people can even look out at this book. It's called Tuesdays with Maury, and some of you out there, I'm sure, have read this. And the front of it's an old man, a young man, and life's greatest lessons. And there's a space in there where he's talking about death. And I just wanted to read that because I think it's really beautiful. Everyone knows they're going to die, he said again, but nobody believes it. If we did, we would do things differently. So we kid ourselves about death, I said. Yes, but there's a better approach to know you're going to die, and to be prepared for it at any time. That's better. That way, you can actually be more involved in your life while you're living. How can you ever be prepared to die? Do what the Buddhists do. Every day, have a little bird on your shoulder that asks, is today the day? Am I ready? Am I doing all I need to do? Am I being the person I want to be? He turned his head to his shoulder as if the bird were there now. Is today the day I die?
And what do you take away from that, Heidi?
I just take away with being present, not living in the past and not living for the future, but really being here right now and enjoying this time, my first time on the radio, in this place with you, to see your energy and how comfortable the two of you are, and that we are talking about death right now. So my dream of having death to be talked about in Sandpoint is happening in this moment.
You're certified in death midwifery. What does that entail? Like, what do you do as, I guess, a death midwife?
Well, that's just a training that I did. I'm a holistic health practitioner, mm-hmm. and so I help people get balanced in body, mind, and spirit. And the thing is that we still die, and it's mm-hmm. not an unhealthy thing to do, to die. But it's just, how do you approach that, and how do you prepare for that? So in doing the work with the living, it kind of worked with me to work with the people that are passing. I actively am at this point not, you know, seeing clients here in Sandpoint. I've answered a few phone calls and helped people figure some things out. But I would really, my big dream is to have a nonprofit that is in the Inland Northwest that is focused on conscious death and dying. So there's a group of people that can support families when they're going through the process. Because when you're in the middle of it, even me, I'm going to need help and support. And so I want to help build and feed a community that I can support, that can also support me, you know, when I pass, or my partner, or my family, someone in my family passes. And I wanted to mention, too, is that we hope that this is going to be an ongoing thing. This is not just a one-time event. I mean, my dream is that we would do this once a month and just have a date that we pick. And we don't know what that's going to look like until we meet the people that show up here on Monday. But if you want to go to Facebook, if you do Facebook, we have a group. It's the Inland Northwest Death Cafe. And we'll be posting on there the Sandpoint meetings and also Coeur d'Alene. And I plan on connecting with Spokane and seeing if I can get some folks to host one there. So if you're listening to this and you're not right here in Sandpoint, and you're in the area, maybe you could find a place to meet up and drink some tea and talk about death. And if you don't do Facebook, you can find it on my event page on my website, anthrodynamic.com. So it'll be listed there.
Again, this is Monday, January 21st, 4 to 5 p.m. at Evans Brothers Coffee in the Granary District. And I love the little subtitle, Tea, Cake, Death, Join the Conversation, All Bodies Invited. I like the word bodies. I take it that was purposefully put there, correct?
Correct.
I just have to ask you, Brian, I have to ask you, did you ever watch 6 Feet Under?
Yes, I did. And I will say that did introduce a natural burial in that television series.
Right.
And, that sparked a national interest in that process right there. So as interesting as the TV show was, that did wonders for the conscious death and dying and that sort of thing.
Well, it certainly drew attention to a subject matter that you don't see that often, like a regular series in a funeral home. Mm-hmm. And I thought the first 2 to 3 years were just absolutely some of the best storytelling. And then they, you know, there was a black humor to it. Then they introduced the child that the one of the brothers had. And all of a sudden, you can't have children with black humor. And I felt it went downhill. But that's me. But, boy, I thought the first 3 years were just some of the best. Mm-hmm. Well,
I share that sentiment.
Do you?
I haven't seen that show, and I watched it. Yeah, at the time, years ago, watched it once. Hard to go back and revisit it because it's so.
You know, the hand,
so black,
the hands, yeah. And the introduction, you know, separating at the end, just marvelous.
Yeah, and it is worth mentioning that everyone is invited of all ages. This is
age appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's interesting. When I was, I had talked to my mom about my being raised in a funeral home not too long ago, and she mentioned that at the time of when I was younger, it was actually unheard of to bring children to a funeral. And so there was that, I don't know if it's a bit of a shock for a child to actually realize that this is the ending of sorts. All ages are welcome. Everybody's invited.
Did your this is just a personal question. Did your parents have a discussion about when should we let Brian know what we do for a living? When do we, did they have that discussion about when you would be age ready for what they did? Or was it just part of the fabric of your life growing up that you were just there?
It was definitely part of the fabric of my growing up. However, there was, it seemed, this was my perception at the time, was that I don't talk about what my dad did.
Ah, so when you went to school, what did classmates say?
You know, I don't recall exactly how I handled that, but I was also privy to a lot of information about my classmates, because the town I grew up in, if there was a death there, then we knew as a family the more intricate details surrounding that death. So I think that my confidentiality in that was probably tied into my dad's
ginormous profession. It was probably enormous.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly good to have both of you on with us. Anything that you want to say in closing? And we'll do one more time the who, what, where, and why. An overview of next Monday.
Yeah, I'd like to say that for me, the discussion of death leads me to a question that I carry with me, and the question is, how can we craft a better world for the generations that are yet to come? And I believe that talking about our own mortality and living our lives to the fullest, knowing that it will end at some point, benefits us as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that bringing Death Cafe to this community can spark that sort of conversation.
And echoing what Heidi said, living in the present, the mm-hmm. little bird on the shoulder, becoming more aware and being more conscious how one lives one's life on a day-to-day basis. I think it all ties together. You know, a discussion about death is also a discussion about living.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that the two are intertwined. Mm-hmm. Monday, January 21st, 4 to 5 p.m., Evans Brothers. Heidi and Brian, thank you guys so much for coming in. And keep in touch with us. And if there are subsequent death cafes, you know, keep us in the pipeline. We will. We do a community calendar, and we'd be more than happy. And then maybe down the road, have you come back, and where are you at? What have you learned?
Yeah.
Great.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us on.
Very great to have you.
Brian Lawrenson and Heidi Hamp, thank you very much. What do we do now, Jim? Community calendar?
We've got a few items on. Mm-hmm. I can do one right off the top of my head, and
sure.
Then we can go to Bird Note at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
At the Panada Theater, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is the Banff Film Festival, and it comes to the community every year, and it is at 7 o'clock on Friday, 7 o'clock on Saturday, and 6 o'clock on Sunday. I don't know if any more tickets are available, but certainly you can go to panada.org to find out where tickets can be picked up. But it's a great event if you've never been. I'm volunteering on Friday and Saturday.
That means you get to see most of it, don't you?
Well,
maybe.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Well, they have an intermission. You got to get popcorn. But
yeah.
I do sneak in and catch a couple here and there. But there, have either of you been to the Banff Film Festival? Outdoor stuff. And it's just incredible. I mean, the different things. So that's my little bit of community event. Oh, tonight I'll be on the air at 9 o'clock for my folk show. I'm going to do folk songs dealing with home.
Uh-huh.
Home.
Sure.
9 o'clock, 9 to 10.
We have today here is the Coast Guard public comment deadline. Two applications from BNSF Railway Co. have been submitted to the Coast Guard requesting approval of locations and plans for two new bridges over navigable waterways, one across Lake Pendere and the other across Sand Creek. Coast Guard has published two public notices soliciting comments from mariners exclusively related to navigation issues in relation to those two proposed bridges. Today is the deadline for comments. Address your comments to the bridge administrator, Steve Fisher, at 206-220-7282 or email D1... Oh, that's a fun little email address, D13... www.pf-d13bridges@uscg.mil.
I'm sure our listeners got that.
Right. I'm glad I hope everybody jotted that down. You'll probably just want to Google that, I think.
Or go to Sandpoint Online. That's where you can get all of the community events. And I think we're out of time, Jack.
It's 9 o'clock.
It's 9 o'clock. Time for Bird Note. 3 o'clock Rush is on at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
That's right. And the Folk Show at 9.
Folk Show at 9. Mm-hmm. And have a good weekend.
Yes.
Thanks for tuning in.
You are listening to 88.5 KRFY Ponder A.